My name's Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time!
The best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be! And you know it!
With a tear in my eye!
The queen of the crop, acknowledge me!
Episode 411 of Top Rope Nation. Alongside Justin Joint, I am your host for this evening. Jesse Velasquez, Ryan Drosty is not with us. He is weathering a storm, per se, in amongst the Iowan teachers down there as well. So, Justin, how are you on this Monday night?
I was confused there for a second. It's like, wait, I don't think we're supposed to get hit by storms until tomorrow. That's when we're going to be under the tornado watch. But yeah, man, I'm doing pretty good. I'm wiped out on mandatory overtime this week, up very late last night, which we will talk about. And yeah, just kind of dad exhausted.
I do not blame you. That's why I went to bed, I think. Yeah, right before the six man started and watched the rest this morning when I had the time.
I'm anxious to talk about the main event because I wonder if that colors how we feel about it. You watched it with a clear head and fresh eyes in the morning, and I was forcing myself to watch it because I knew I wasn't going to have time today to finish it before we podcasted. So,
yeah, that's the absolute hard part about going all the way through an event, which Ryan did last night, and he definitely wanted us to mention that, and I'm going to do that here right now because there is a lot going on this week, and I have to do this. The patrons of Top Rope Nation who support us and keep us going, they're getting paid this week with a lot of content.
I mean, I feel like a jerk now talking about how tired I am having to stay up and watch, you know, all of the show. Meanwhile, Ryan watched all of the show and then had to do a review podcast afterwards. Oh, man. Poor guy.
A solo one, too, no less.
Yeah, solo. And he rocked it, though. I highly recommend any of our Patreons. Make sure you go check out Ryan's review.
Yeah, so that is there and available for you. I believe he put that out very late last night. So here's the things that you're going to get paid with, though, this week. Thursday Classics, WrestleMania 10. Former co-host of said show, Kyle Ross, will be joining us.
Hey-o.
So always a plus when that happens. I am recording a TRN Unplugged tomorrow night live for patrons. Yeah. See, this is the type of stuff. This is something I kind of don't want to do, and I do feel obligated to do it, though. So, Jacob DeLawrence and Cedric Welton, formerly of We Got NXT or We Got Next, are going to be joining me and previewing WrestleMania 42.
Is that happening soon?
It is. So the good news about that, Justin, yes, is you get to escape it. More good news for me is these two are informed with what's going on in World Wrestling Entertainment, so it's actually going to sound quite a bit educated.
That'll be interesting. Look forward to hearing that.
Yeah, so that will be available for you patrons late tomorrow night, early Wednesday morning in the United Kingdom. And then, of course, potentially a Sunday, Monday. We'll see what that looks like, because contrary to popular notion, or in your case, it is WrestleMania season.
I don't foresee me watching it. Unless Ryan invites me over on Saturday night. Maybe I'll watch night one, which he has not hinted at all. But I guess I'm just throwing it out there. That's probably going to be the only way I watch WrestleMania.
You're going to be beat up from the week because, like you said, mandatory overtime.
Yeah.
Monday through Thursday, or are you going all the way Friday as well?
Oh, yeah. Monday through Friday.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, yeah. Pod tonight. The next two nights we'll be doing research for classics and then record classics on Thursday. Oh.
I sense some heavy lifting on that show anyway.
Yeah, I'm not too worried. This is easily one that if I wanted to, I could probably skip a whole lot of my research and just hang out like I used to.
Oh, you most certainly could, as we alluded to last show, where you'd look over the corner of your your eyes at what's happening live. And I guess before we get into that, it's playoff season in your favorite sport in America.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Unfortunately, just lost my fantasy basketball league. Was in the lead for the entire second half of the season and then lost it in the last 2 weeks. But I'm looking forward to these playoffs. They should be really good.
West is loaded.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the East is really good too. I think we've kind of gotten used to that the West is loaded narrative, that it's kind of easy just to disregard the East. Obviously, it's nowhere near as tough as the West. But I think next year, going in next year, when you get Halliburton back on the Pacers and they're going to have probably a top four pick. I mean, the Hornets are looking really good. I'll be curious to see what the Magic do this offseason. Giannis, the things are a little tense in Milwaukee. It's going to be a really fun playoffs and a really fun offseason.
It most certainly is. And the Pistons is the one seed, and Cade Cunningham is now back, which is helpful for that squad.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully our Timberwolves can make a run. I saw KG came back the other night. That was freaking awesome.
He did last night. And most of the players sat it out. Beranger had 24, I believe.
He looks like the real deal.
7 blocks.
Yeah. That dude's legit.
It's going to be a great building block for the future when Rudy's albatross of a contract goes bye-bye.
Did I ask you how you are, or am I a jerk? How's Jesse?
I'm doing really well. I'm like you. I'm kind of dreading this week with all the podcasting we're doing.
It's a loaded week.
Yeah, it is. On top of the shoot job, going to be a little bit murderous for the next 2.5 weeks. So I'll be like you, very low on sleep, but hey, I know this is short term. And it's stuff that I like to do.
Yeah, it's like Thursday is going to be a blast, an absolute blast. We just got to get to Thursday.
Yes, you get to talk about Bret the Hitman Hart winning a world title.
Hell yeah.
And having the greatest opening match in the history of WrestleMania.
Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah, Bret Owen, that's comfort food for me right there.
Greatest ladder match? In wrestling history? Question mark?
We'll talk about that on Thursday.
Okay. All right. Should we talk about the wrestling that happened last night?
That's exactly where we're going right now, Justin. Thank you so much for all of the segueing. AEW Dynasty, I almost said Dynamite, took place last night in Vancouver, British Columbia. I think in front of about 9,000 attendees. And what we always do, give us your grade for AEW Dynasty last night.
I would say an A. I think in my estimation, probably four matches that I would give around that 4-star range. I'm developing a new system. Because there was a conversation in our Discord last night about some people give the stars, some people don't. And somebody made an interesting comment that's just more about vibes. And that's usually how I am. And I find that I really like to see how long a match went. And did it fall where I thought it was? Or did it feel long? Or did it feel short? Because that's usually a pretty good tell as to how much I enjoyed it. But yeah. Four matches right around that 4-star range. Some shocking outcomes, I thought, kind of across the board. And the show built in a really good way where I guess I'll just get it out of the way now. I've talked about this before, but I've never been a huge Kenny Omega fan. I really like Kenny Omega. I can appreciate his in-ring work, but I've definitely always been a tier below, I think, a lot of wrestling fans and their admiration of him. And I've always been kind of indifferent to the idea of him getting another title run. But between the build into the show, where they actually made me believe that that title switch could happen, and then the way the show built itself, where it's like, Jericho lost? Copen Cage lost? You know, it's just like over and over again, Canadians losing except for Kyle O'Reilly. And it had me believing going into the main event. I was pumped, and I was marking out. I was a fanboy, and I was rooting on Kenny Omega. But I would give it an A, but I'm going to go A- just because, again, it's just so late. I don't care that it's long, that the shows are long. That doesn't bother me. It's just that it goes so late on a Sunday.
That's the worst part. Bar none, yeah. I took the high road last night and went to bed at 10 after 10, right after the Osprey Moxie match, and said, I can talk about that. Yeah, I can avoid spoilers, which I did. I was very easily avoided spoilers. I had an hour in between clients this morning, so I watched MJF and Kenny Omega just to get it out of the way in case I wanted to go on social media. So A- is also my grade. I'm starting to become I feel like a broken record when I review these shows. There's tropes I don't like about AEW. Those kind of stick in my craw a little bit, but I've also learned to accept them. There's no denying that how hard the talent work and just the in-ring performances are amazing. Almost each and every AEW pay-per-view. And I think, like you said, Tony Khan and his spacing with how the show went, I felt for the most part was good. There were two matches in particular I felt overstayed their welcome. However, I think there's a couple of matches that over-delivered for me. And there was one that is a borderline match of the year. Borderline, I can't quite put it there. But with having 3 to 4 matches in that 4-star range, it's really easy to give it an A- grade, just like you.
Yeah, nice. Should we just go right to the main event? Talk about the outcome?
We probably should, yes. The Devil versus the God of professional wrestling. Almost 40 minutes. And this is where the lens of watching this fresh in the morning really comes into play. I loved the pacing of this match.
Okay.
How they built very, very slowly the first half. It felt like a Kenny Omega New Japan match to me. And I do, like Omega's New Japan work quite a bit. So to see them kind of turn it up another notch in the second half was great. I loved the selling and how, especially in the first 25 minutes of things, every move felt important. We don't get much of that in pro wrestling anymore. I think in AEW, almost, you don't get that because you get these guys with their sudden rushes after getting hit with a big move. And in senses, it can almost kind of take you out of it a little bit. And it's just like, oh, well, we're going through this again. I think MJF and Omega played that part brilliantly, where they sold everything everlasting with the avalanche one-winged angel.
Ooh, yeah.
Which they teased a couple times. A couple times, Kenny also was trying to get him up for something, and MJF was just desperately holding on. That reminded me a lot of Kenny and Okada, when Okada would go for a Rainmaker, and they just, yeah, stalemate, couldn't move him. Kenny would go for a one-winged angel. Okada knew it was coming, wasn't moving. Just, I love that kind of stuff. It felt like yesteryear to me. I guess, well, Justin, being tired, kind of give me some of your thoughts on the main event.
Well, I liked it, and I didn't know if this was just because of, you know, I was getting tired and I was kind of ready for the show to be over by the time this match came on. But I don't think that's the case. To me, it felt a little bloated. I agree with you that the first half, everything did feel necessary and important, and they sold it all well. But it's kind of becoming an ongoing issue with MJF main event matches that to me just seems like there's easily 5 to 10 minutes that you can cut out where you get to that. Sorry, broken record here. You get to that diminishing returns thing where, okay, well, did anything in that first half I watched mean anything going into the second half of the match? And I always question that kind of stuff, but loved the first half, and I loved like the last 10 minutes of it building to the end. You know, the stuff with the dynamite diamond ring was all really good. The fact that Kenny can claim he deserves a rematch because he got the visual pin on MJF. MJF getting kind of a relatively-ish clean win over Kenny. I know he used the ring on Kenny's diverticulitis to help get that tombstone into the table to the outside. But for the most part, a somewhat clean win. And I was shocked. Honestly, I think the mark in me was a little let down that Kenny didn't win. And I was just like coming out of the show that, you know, I felt on this high through all of Dynasty. It felt like it was building like to the top of this roller coaster. And, you know, by the time it was over, I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I don't hate it. I kind of expected MJF to win, but fuck, with the way that entire show went and with the build, I was like, kind of wanted to see Kenny Omega win. But having said that, I am very excited for the baby face that MJF is going to be facing this Wednesday, because he is going to be putting the title on the line against Darby. And man, I don't know, dude. I think it could happen. I think a title change could happen. It's in, I don't know if it's Darby's hometown, but it's where he trained. It was from where Nick Wayne's dad trained out of. So if you were ever going to do it, yeah, kind of now feels like the time, you know. It's not, and it's not like Darby doesn't need a long title run at all. That's not the kind of world champ he would be. This is a Mick Foley kind of guy where if he can just get his name etched on that lineage, it'd mean a lot, because he's a very special talent and he's a very important wrestler to AEW. This dude cut a fucking promo, a wrestling promo on the top of Mount Everest. I will never get over that. And they can still go back to Kenny, because I think a lot of us in the back of our heads are thinking, you know, what's All In going to be? What's the main event? And I think a lot of us are thinking, one of the biggest matches they could put on is part three of Ospreay and Omega for the world title, because we all assume Ospreay's going to get it there. But yeah, shocked by the finish and a little disappointed, which I think, you know, it was just a little bit of a letdown.
I actually feel that's kind of a good thing.
It
suspended your disbelief.
Yeah, I mean, why the fuck do we watch wrestling if not to feel things? And that match had me feeling things, or at the very least, the outcome had me feeling things. You know, certainly there was other matches on the card that did the same thing. That's why I love this promotion. Go ahead.
No, I just saw something pop up, but we'll talk about it later. Finish your thought, and then I'm going to roll into something.
I guess I walk out of this pay-per-view, most importantly, being excited and curious to see where things are going. Like, Omega's not done. Where's MJF going to go? Can Darby actually do it this Wednesday? We're going to get in the other matches, you know, Ospreay and Mox and, you know, the Death Riders versus the United Empire, Cope and Cage versus FTR. There's, you know, what's going on with Jericho? We're going to touch on all this, but man, I mean, that's a lot of good stuff where you're coming out of the show being like, well, where the fuck is he going to go now? You know, what's going to happen? It made me excited to watch Dynamite.
There's three championship matches advertised for the show. So not just the big one. There's two more. We'll get into that at the very end.
I know one of the other ones.
Yeah. So I think, again, having the advantage of watching it the next day, MJF and Omega, as of now, was my favorite match of the night.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
It was. I just think they delivered on a big stage in every single way. And the way that MJF won the match to me is just kind of, it's typical MJF. He's just going to sneak it all out. Any way he can, cheating by nook, crook, and just those little devilish tactics that he uses. And that's just the mark to me of a really good heel champion. Yeah, he's one of the best.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would put it third or fourth for my favorite match of the night.
Yeah. Probably. Most people are in that contrarian. I am the contrarian. Most people are thinking like you, I think, in terms of favorite match of the night. Yeah. And it's a 4 hour and 15 minute show, too. So, again, it's a disadvantage of it being the very end of the night, being the longest match of the night. And all of that good stuff. So I want to get into, we're going to get into some of the comments here in a moment. Let's hit on Darby Allin and Andrade right away, because it's going to tie into Darby and MJF here on Wednesday night. That was my second favorite match of the night.
Same. My second favorite match as well. When it happened, it was my favorite. Again, man, Darby's fucking special, dude. He comes from this lineage of you watch somebody and it's like, there's nobody like that. You know, it's the Mick Foley's, it's the Terry Funk's. There's a few, literally just a handful of other names you could group in with someone who stands out as much as Darby does. The fucking drop kick on the stairs out in the crowd. I mean, this guy is insane, I should get Andrade in here, because he has just been phenomenal. Definitely. Since coming back to AEW, just outrageous in every aspect. He's really letting it all hang out there. I saw something in that match I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. That was that spot on the top rope where I believe Andrade was going for like a Samoan drop or something, and they flipped all the way around. I mean, the amount of error that could have led to catastrophe with that move. I was holding my breath. I couldn't believe it, but Darby reversed it into a crossface. It was just insane. Just absolutely insane.
At first it looked to me like a modified Spanish fly, but you're right. It was a Samoan drop turned into a crossface, which to me, yeah, that was insane. And then Andrade doing the tranquilo, and then Darby runs right at him, tackles him through the ropes, was such a fun spot too. Yeah, I don't know if I should apologize to Andrade right now or not for all the shit that I gave him behind a paywall for the silence he got at WWE. Go ahead.
You weren't wrong. He deserved that criticism because he was getting silence. You could tell he was expecting bigger things when he went back to WWE, and they immediately didn't happen. And I think he realized very quickly that he wasn't going to get anything he wanted out of that run. And we're just getting right now the most motivated Andrade that there's ever been.
He's ripped to shreds.
Yes.
And he looks like he's going to be going babyface very, very soon.
Yes, that was. So he saved face. Good. The finish of the match being essentially like a cradle finish. I can't remember what Darby calls that.
The Last Supper. Something that has to do with supper.
Is it the Last Supper?
It might be.
That leg lock kind of cradle thing, which is very cool, but that's how we won. So he got, it was kind of a quote unquote lucky win. So Andrade saves face there. And, you know, he gave Darby the handshake afterwards. And it almost looked like when he was leaving that he was going to turn around and go attack him, which he kind of played into that really well. But he didn't do that. So, again, coming out of the show, where's Darby going? Can he actually do this? And then what's going to happen with Andrade in the Don Callis family? And there's all sorts of chaos going on with the Don Callis family.
It's on brand with Andrade's story, because at the St. Paul Dynamite, Andrade was hesitant to attack Darby Allin. Mm-hmm. He was kind of hesitant to wrestle Darby Allin when Don Callis announced it, that he would be the one to try to step in front of Darby becoming the number one contender. So shaking hands afterwards made all of the sense in the world. Now let's get into the big part. Darby MJF, Wednesday night, Everett, Washington. I think you called your shot.
I think most importantly, I don't know who's going to win, but I think most importantly for me, the mark of professional wrestling, I really want to see Darby win it. I think he did, you know, this is such a stupid term. He deserves it for everything he sacrifices for AEW. Like I would even be okay. Like obviously the thinking would be wins it on Wednesday, drops it back at Double or Nothing, but it could even just be a week. You know, AEW does not do short title reigns with their main title. I think that was the shortest one. I mean, planned one. Obviously, there's like the CM Punk stuff where he had to drop it. But, you know, the Samoa Joe, I guess, title reign in the fall was pretty short by their standards. But I don't know, man. I would like to see Darby get it. I think that'd be really cool. They have a great built-in reason for it happening, where it doesn't hurt MJF at all, him just coming off of this 40-minute main event against the God of Pro Wrestling, where he just got his absolute ass beat, and he has to, you know, he has to fight again. He has to defend his title again, like 3 days later. So there's some good reasons to do it now.
Yeah. Gosh, there's so many comments. We're going to get to a good chunk of these comments here in a moment. The feel-good story is there. And I guess the question I'll ask you right now is, Justin, is are you going to let Kit stay up for the main event?
I have my fingers crossed that they open it up.
Sure.
I doubt that's going to happen, but you know, it wouldn't be a first that Tony throws out the big match first. I don't know. I'm heavily considering it, man. Like legit, I was thinking about it tonight while putting him to bed. I was like, oh man, should I let him stay up for that? He'd freaking love it.
I think you have to.
Where are you at on it? Do you want, because I know, like, especially in our Discord, there's a lot of people that don't want to see him win this title. So question, do you think he will? And would you like to see it?
I'm more open to it than most.
Okay.
Would I like to see it? I am indifferent. I really am. I'm going to go out of my way, though, to say I think it's going to happen.
Oh, all right. Calling your shot.
It's a hometown thing. And they can go so many ways. I'm with a belief, like you said a couple minutes ago, that Darby will lose it at Double or Nothing to somebody. Whether that's MJF in a rematch in New York, in Queens. But that might not go in line with what they want to do for All In. They probably don't want an MJF Osprey or an MJF Omega, because we've seen both those matches. That'd be the third iteration. Now, Osprey Omega is also a third iteration if and when that happens. And let's scroll up to what I was going to highlight here. There's so many comments, and I'm just dropping the ball here. Where did it go? The Owen Hart finals. Would you rather see that, Osprey and Omega, or wait until All In?
I don't know, man. A big part of why I've been enjoying AEW for the past year is because I've just been kind of enjoying the ride. Like I have faith in what Tony Khan is going to do or what he has planned. I can't wrap my head around another MJF Osprey all-in match. I just can't see that happening. I mean, I know it would be the third, but I just feel like there's got to be a bigger match, you know? And I don't know how they get there with the current title situation, because you'd want to get it off of MJF. You know, it's not going to be Darby going to All In. You know, I'm thinking either Omega or Swerve are probably the best possibilities. Like, I think Swerve and Ospreay at All In. But then again, that's also, I don't want to see Swerve with another short title reign. You know, if he's going to get it back, I want to see him hold it for a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah. Sorry, but I'm at a loss.
There are so many things that are up in the air, and that's what makes this so exciting for mm-hmm. All Elite Wrestling fans as a whole, is you could go a plethora of ways as to who you'd like to hold the title, who you'd like to see win the Owen Hart Cup, and who you'd like to see in this thing first and foremost. I mean, there's a lot of avenues to go down, and yeah, but I've turned to what some people would call the dark side. And Darby Allin as an AEW World Heavyweight Champion for about a month-long reign,
Max,
winging it in his hometown. This is probably the only time it can happen, if I'm being honest.
I agree. And I think part of the reasons why I want them to pull the trigger, I just don't know how he comes back from this one if he, you know, falls short again in his hometown, you know. The story for the, you know, there was a large chunk of last year where it made sense storyline wise that Darby could be the one to take it from Mox at All In. And we were all worried about it. Like that didn't feel like a Darby moment. You know, we all wanted Hangman. This to me kind of feels like a Darby moment. Like, I don't know, just something about it feels like the right time.
Yeah. In spite of the fact, and again, there's discourse out there that say he's not your stereotypical world champion, which he definitely isn't. This is a Mikey Whipwreck scenario to me.
Mick Foley wasn't a world champion wrestler either.
Oh, he was not. No. But good Lord, that I appreciate that man so much. I like the more and more I covered 1995 ECW and he turned in, I was like, he's like top 10 for me all time? Maybe. It's hard to deny it. Darby right now, just the influential run that he's on, and he's always had the crowd support.
Yeah.
And he's Team AEW. I mean, this isn't a participation world championship. I feel he's earned it.
Fuck yeah, he has. Fuck yeah. You look at all the ways he sacrificed himself. Just in that match against Andrade alone. But you go back to everything. Just the way he wrestles. It's just so chaotic, and just the way he uses his body as a weapon. This guy isn't going to be around for a long time. That's why I keep trying to hammer home. We got to appreciate him now while we got him, because it's just not guaranteed for a long career with him.
Yeah, he's Gumby. I still don't understand that. Well, let's tie this in a little bit, and then I think we're going to go back up to the top. Let's get into Will Ospreay and John Moxley for the Continental Championship. I love the way they started it with Ospreay Hidden Blade right out of the gate. Would you have liked to have seen a cover right away on that?
No, I liked the idea that they were going for, where this is about more than the title for Will Ospreay. This is about revenge. This is about beating the shit out of Moxley. So I did not mind that at all. You know, he was doing pointing the clock. He's sitting, you know, telling the camera, I got plenty of time. And it kind of bleeds into the finish, where there was this just little bit of arrogance on his part. You know, he is back from a pretty significant neck surgery, and he was just overconfident and let his emotions get the best of him, where it was more about trying to inflict pain on Moxley more than trying to win the title. So I dug it. This was my match of the night pretty easily. I freaking love this thing from top to bottom.
Speaking of Japanese style matches, and having covered Kobashi and Misawa from Noah, this kind of felt like that to me with all of the suplexes on heads.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, a lot of stiff clotheslines. I got to make my plea now.
Do it.
When Ospreay does the springboard, into the elbow by Moxley, and Moxley goes directly into the flex pose. Somebody, any listener out there, I'm begging you, find me that gif of the elbow into the flex. I'm begging you. I'm not on Twitter anymore. I'm sure it's out there somewhere, but I could not find it on Blue Sky anywhere.
If I find it, I will send it to you tonight. That'll be my mission.
Please do. Please do.
It's been super easy to find GIFs. I actually found the one that was posted in our Discord earlier with MJF humping Kenny Omega's face.
So you know that I can have some issues with Ospreay matches.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, it's kind of like the same thing with MJF, where it feels like they just get a little overindulgent with stuff and things stop mattering as much as they should. That's why I liked this pairing, because I thought Mox really brought Ospreay down to quote unquote earth in a sense where it was like he was kind of making him wrestle his way a little bit, slowing down the pace. And they were a really good pairing. And I would like to see more of this, which I think we're going to, obviously. This isn't a feud that's going away anytime soon, but man, that the paradigm shift into the kind of last gasp hidden blade that Ospreay did.
That was good.
Yes, that's something I'd normally kind of get a little annoyed by, but I thought they executed that perfectly.
And toppled right over as well. Yeah. The first match, go ahead.
I was going to say, even the finish where, you know, Ospreay's on the inside, finally gets in there and immediately stomped and eats like, what was it, like two or three paradigm shifts? I mean, I don't know, perfectly executed. I absolutely love this match.
That's kind of where it took me out of the match a little bit. And that's why it's not in the pile driver on the stairs to a guy with a surgically repaired neck, like in the way he sold it. And for him to do the trope of the nine count and, oh, I got to hurry in. It took me out. And
oh, see that, that could be something that would bother me in a lot of other instances, but it didn't in this case. Like it bothered me more when they did it at the very beginning of the Pac match, where they really milked, you know, Pac attacking him at the beginning and he was acting like his neck was broken again. That one bothered me. This one, not so much, because he did just take the pile driver onto the steel steps. And I thought he did pretty well with the jumping into the ring. Because that, I mean, that to me, that's usually a Dolph Ziggler special where they're dead. Then all of a sudden they just jump up and run in. I felt we got a little bit more movement and re-energized Ospreay to get into the ring.
This is where you learn. I'm going to go back to Kobashi Misawa again. When Kobashi took that tiger suplex off of the ramp on his head and rolled into the ring at 19. Like it took like every inch of him just to get up, and he just pathetically rolled into the ring just to avoid the count out. I wish guys would do that now.
Yeah. I would like to see a little bit slower way in there, but I get, you know, I get the excitement of the quick movements.
Mm-hmm. And then that's when the double paradigm shifts and getting up at two, I was just like, I felt the match should have been over there. I get that it's Will Ospreay. I mean, I love Will Ospreay. I rarely criticize him. But at that point, it took me a little out of the match. So I would probably drop that to either third or fourth match of the night for me.
It's so funny that we both love Will Ospreay, but it seems to be for different reasons when it comes to in-ring. That there's different things that we get out of Will Ospreay matches where, like, this kind of match really hits for me, and there's been a lot of other ones that really hit for you, and I'm kind of more lukewarm on. That's why you got to love professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm. I like Jon Moxley's style a lot, though, yeah. And I always have.
He's on a run right now, though. Like, he is just in his element.
Yeah, those two have really good chemistry. Their match mm-hmm. in New Japan and Wrestle Kingdom with David Finlay was also very good, too. Wrestle Kingdom in 2024, a couple of months before Ospreay left. So I would recommend people going on their way to go back and watch that too. Yeah, these two have great chemistry. We'll see something down the road. And I said it before, I think if Ospreay does win the title at All In, Moxie's going to make a great opponent for him, and Ospreay mm-hmm. can overcome him.
Oh, that's a good idea. Maybe you don't go right back to this match.
Especially if you want to put the title on Ospreay. I don't think you do.
Or at least not in a singles match. You could do like the Anarchy in the Arena, Death Riders, United Empire.
Something along those but lines.
I kind of feel like the thing that's going to occupy Will's time in between now and All In is possibly, you know, a Callum Newman feud. Like it does seem like, you know, he's getting married soon. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be out for that for a while. But he seems to be very engaged with New Japan right now. Like he really wants to get back over there more often. So it'll be curious to see how that plays out with AEW television.
Oh, you mean he's unselfish like Bryan Danielson?
Yeah, probably to a fault.
Okay, that might make me love him even more.
I mean, hey, that was last year, you know, with, you know, speaking of the Owen Hart tournament, was apparently both him and Hangman were in Tony's ear trying to tell them that the other person should win.
I love that match too.
Oh yeah, fuck yeah. It's a great match.
Jeez. Let's go back up to the top. Some people's match of the night, and I see it here, Tim Jensen highlighted it. Young Bucks, Kazuchika Okada, Konosuke, Takeshita. These four delivered. It was about a 20-minute. It was like just under 20. Young Bucks get the win. I was curious how they were going to get the win. I actually loved how they got the win. They pinned Okada. That mm-hmm. made me happy. I was like, mm-hmm. if Takeshita eats another pin, I'm seriously going to throw something through a television set. I'm just so high on that guy. But nonetheless, I mean, your thoughts on that match?
Enjoyed it. I actually going into it, I was pretty confident that number one, the Bucks were going to win, and number two, Okada was going to eat the pin. Because I'm pretty sure the last time that Okada and Takeshita teamed together, it was vice versa, with Okada kind of costing the match and Takeshita eating the pinfall. So I felt comfortable that they had to go the other route this time, in order to keep building this feud. The Bucks had to win. I dug the match. The Bucks just there's always two or three things in a Bucks match that takes me out of it. In this case, there was a moment where I believe it was Nick Jackson. I think he had a code red on Takeshita, and then just ran back to kneel down next to Matt so that they could eat double knees from Takeshita. It's just like that kind of thing where it's just like spots are more important than the storytelling of the match, where it's like, oh, that made zero sense and kind of took me out of it. But that's just me personally. That's just my relationship with the Young Bucks. I still fucking loved it. It was an incredible match. But talking about my new theory about match lengths dictating my thoughts on the match itself, like I looked up afterwards, this match was about 20 minutes long. It's like, that feels exactly right. That, you know, I wouldn't have guessed over. I wouldn't have guessed under. To me, it was like just under a 4-star match. Still absolutely incredible. Okada's kind of a blast. He's such, I kind of love this nerd version of him. Yes. Just a total goofball. I think the big question for me coming out of it is, do you save this for All In? Can you drag this all the way out till then to save the match for Okada Takeshita? Like, I feel like that should be the play. I know people, you know, the stipulation of the match was if they won, then they would get to fight each other at Double or Nothing. And I think there are still people that believe that match could happen. But man, I would save it for All In. I would keep dragging this thing out as long as possible.
This is where it's a shame that Kyle Fletcher is injured.
Yeah.
Because this could be an Anarchy in the Arena scenario. Okada, Fletcher, part member of the Don Callis family. Then you get Andrade, Takeshita, and an all-star team. babyfaces more often than not have won these matches in the past. So I think it's something that you could definitely build up to. So I'm in your camp. I think waiting till All In would be great. I'm still a little bit disappointed. I said it on Unplugged that those two had their match at World's End.
Yeah, I heard that. I was surprised by that. I disagree. I like it. You got to get, I don't mind that they got a first one in there and that Okada got the win. I mean, I would, the goal should be Takeshita getting the huge win over Okada. And now they can, they've planted that seed of doubt that he can actually do it. And at the same time, they've made it pretty obvious that Okada's kind of scared of Takeshita, even though he got the win. Like it does, to Pedro Fifth's point here in the comments, you know, thinking that Okada was going to lay down for the Bucks to pin and screw Takeshita out of the match at Double or Nothing. I had thoughts along the same lines that Okada would try and do something to avoid it. I actually, you know, for us being opposites here tonight, I didn't really like the finish. You know, it was a 20-minute match, and it took Takeshita 20 minutes to decide that, fuck Okada, you know, just let him lose. It's like, that's been your opinion of him for months now. So that didn't hit, or that didn't land quite the same with me as I know it did with other people. Didn't take away from anything. Like I said, it's still a borderline 4-star match.
Mm-hmm. They fought in the middle of it.
Do you have any more thoughts on this? You go ahead. And
I do have a few. Okada putting on Nick or Matt Jackson's gear was fan-flipping-tastic.
Yeah. I giggled.
Yeah. Big time. I want Okada to be a serious wrestler, but he throws all this comedy shit in here, and I love it.
He's good at it.
He's so good. Yeah, it's a different role. It's just weird not seeing the high and mighty Rainmaker in AEW. And yeah, I think you just have to accept it, and I'm okay with it. Just these little goofy one-off spots. I was going to scroll up to notes. Oh, I didn't have any notes at all. No. I didn't. It's the match of the night on Cage Match, which I found kind of odd.
It
wasn't my thing because there was a couple of Young Bucks tropes I didn't like in this match either, much like you. So I would rank that one lower than Moxley and Ospreay also.
So can I do my little segue here?
Yes.
So what I was not expecting, and again, I dug Bucks versus Okada and Takeshita. Mm-hmm. What I was not expecting was to enjoy the tag match with Adam Copeland more than this tag team match. And I did. I liked the Cope and Cage versus FTR match slightly better than this one. Just like what Ryan said in his review, I mean, this was heads and tails better than their match at All Out that they had. This one was just so much better in every way. And I wasn't super shocked that they lost, just because I think there's all sorts of iterations of this feud they're going to do. You know, I think at some point there's going to be the title change, which would be just a 2-on-2. I think at some point, which is why I thought the Bucks were going to win, because they've already kind of teased there's some sort of triple threat tag team match going on here. And I think the end game is, you know, Cope and Cage and Beth versus FTR and Stokely. I think that's going to happen at some point. So this one's going to go for quite a while. And the most, or I should say the best way to keep it interesting is for FTR to retain. And, you know, they're my favorite tag team by a country mile. And you put him in with two veterans, and as lukewarm as I am with Copeland right now, especially in AEW, I mean, they just overcame it. And honestly, I enjoyed Cope in this match. I thought he was good. It damn near looked like that might have been hard way with the belt to the head. It probably wasn't, but a great blade job if it wasn't hard way.
Much like in all of Adam Copeland's matches, it went a little bit too long for me. A little bit.
I agree. Well, yeah. How long did that one go?
I think this one was a little over 22.
I would agree. That is too long. That is one kind of felt every minute, or not in a bad way, but felt the length of it.
Yeah. That's an interesting take. I'm actually going to, well, I'm going to backtrack to Tim's here a little bit later. This one. I liked the theory Christian didn't push Stokely hard enough for me.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
Stokely almost had to roll into the pin himself.
Yeah. So Christian needed to sell that better. Totally agree. Totally agree.
But yes, this match to me was on par, I think, with the Bucks and Takeshita and Okada. I think there was the same match rating for me. Yeah, it was a really good match in FTR. Yeah, best tag team in the business for 100% for sure. Them singing "Oh Canada," I love the crowd singing in the very beginning. I felt this was when the crowd hit their peak. It was a really good crowd for the most part, but I think they were just around a little bit too long, getting 5 hours worth of wrestling in and kind of faded at the end.
And Ryan addressed this in his review. I felt they kind of died a little bit in the main event.
Yeah.
Like they were up for a lot of it. It was a great crowd. I think there was another level they could have taken it to, but they did feel a little burnt out by the end of the show.
They most certainly did their... Oh, I was just in all caps almost. I said, Christian playing the asshole tweener is great stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Christian's the best.
Crowds can't help but cheer him, but he's just doing dastardly heel things. We're going to go backwards because there was a match in between there that ended up surprising me. Go for it.
So real quick, Darby Allin, Andrade, that was 16 minutes and 46 seconds. I would have guessed way shorter on that one. That one to me just flew by.
Really good.
That's why I kind of graded a little bit higher. And Ricochet versus Chris Jericho. I enjoyed it. Now, it went 19 minutes, and that one felt long. Like, I could feel that time. I wish they would have cut that shorter, but holy shit. Ricochet won, dude. For all of us bald and balding guys.
Oh, so good. Yeah, and Jericho grabbing the camera saying he's bald. Yeah.
Yeah. He's definitely, I haven't been able to completely put my finger on what he's doing. There's definitely some, like, let's play the hits, you know, last tour of a legendary band. He is smart enough to know that if he's going to stay a baby face with this AW crowd, because he cannot go in the ring like what an AW fan is accustomed to. Mm-hmm. So in order for him to stay over with the fans as a babyface, it's really smart for him to take this loss, to lose to Ricochet when everybody assumed Jericho's back. He's going to start beating all the guys we like, and it's just going to get fucking old really quick. I thought this was really smart on his part. For as dumb as I think he is outside of professional wrestling, Chris Jericho knows what the fuck is going on when it comes to pro graps.
Isn't that great? Michael Jenkinson, you can smile now. Yeah, Jericho played his role pretty well last night. I thought the shooting star press into the code breaker was nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he worked really well. He looked great. I thought the selling of the arm injury after that Death Valley driver onto the ring apron, that was brutal looking in the way they sold that. I to the point where I think I've seen some people online speculate that that might have been a legit injury. I don't think I believe that. To me, the plan had to have been for Ricochet to win that. But Jericho kind of picked the perfect time to come back, the perfect places to come back, and the perfect opponent to come back to. And again, losing, I think, was really smart. And I am excited to see where this is going.
A Canadian tour. Yeah. Coming back and being the babyface in that role was definitely the right way to go. And absolutely, Pedro, Jericho is definitely a better bad guy. And he's going to turn eventually. It's a matter of time. And maybe we'll actually care a little bit about him again. Before we get into the next match, real fast, could you see Okada and Takeshita both being in the Owen Hart tournament first and foremost? Because I don't.
That's a lot of wrestling for Okada. I don't know if we'll see that.
He did put in a Continental Classic.
That's true, but that's kind of his thing. That's like the G1 equivalent.
Yeah. But yeah, I could maybe see
Takeshita. It's not a bad idea. Again. It's not a bad idea by any
means. Yeah. And this is one of those scenarios where you want to put your quote-unquote best guys in a situation like this. So the TNT Gauntlet Casino title match. As tropey as it was, per usual, with guys lying around on the outside, yeah. Which I hated.
An issue.
Always hate it. The in-ring action left me wanting a little bit more. I enjoyed the match in spite of the tropes. Because you saw some people in there. This was the work rate title match. You just threw all guys who could work in there. Let's see what they could do. Give me your initial thoughts, and then we'll get to the winner.
All right. So I thought it was the perfect time to do the Casino Gauntlet. There for a while, they were overplaying that hand because this is a match I really do dig. It's kind of AEW's version of the Royal Rumble. It was the perfect time to play that hand because, for one, the TNT title was up for grabs, kind of on short and unknown notice. And this, for the first two-thirds, really showed the depth of this roster because literally every guy that came out, I was like, oh, I want to see him win. It was like guy after guy, I want to see him win. Until we got to Garcia and Bowens and Yuta. Then the match kind of dropped for me at that point. But I still thought it was pretty good. I agree with you. Too many guys laying on the outside. But the good thing is there are matches that I felt we got teases of in this that I want to see more of. Ciampa and Roosh. Mm-hmm. Yes, please. You know, and most importantly, our boy. Kevin Knight,
yes,
is the TNT champion, dude. Let's go.
I'm mildly surprised that happened.
Same. I predicted Brody King, and I'm guessing the reason that didn't happen is because apparently he had a friend who died, and he was at the funeral and stuff, which is sad. But so I don't think he could be there. But, man, I mean, even if he could be there, this still could have been Kevin Knight's time. You know, it's like they're doing something here with a possible heel turn down the road, some dissension between him and Speedball. You know, he kind of stole Speedball's moment there by hitting that UFO splash on top of him and getting the pin. But, too long.
Yep.
Too many guys in there in the second half where it's like, there's no way you're going to win. Especially when I still felt there was guys in the back you could have brought out who I would have enjoyed to see out there more, but still dug it, man. It was cool.
Tim, I don't know if I agree with you or disagree with you.
No, strong disagree.
I wouldn't have minded him becoming a two-time champion personally, but there were other better options out there to me too.
Yeah, I mean, you go Kevin Knight or even Bandido would have been good. Like I said, I was hoping for Brody King.
Yes.
Pack.
Oh.
I mean, Speedball. I fucking love El Clone. That dude's another one who's like the way he moves in a ring is truly unique. Yeah, man, that was a lot of fun. Boy, I think you might have brought this up in the Discord. What's going on with Anthony Bowens? Like, what is he lacking that he can just not like? I like his in-ring work.
Love it.
You know, I love his personality outside of AEW. Seems like a legit, cool guy. Great body, great look. But, man, there is just something missing, something that is not clicking with fans.
I don't understand it, especially with how receptive they are of where he leans, just in general, with life. You think he'd be super easy to cheer for and get behind. And he's away from Max Caster right now as well, which is helpful too. Billy Gunn, you haven't seen him much. So yeah, like what is the disconnect with a guy like Anthony Bowens? His work rate isn't quite to the level of a lot of the guys that we saw in the ring.
Agree.
I think his personality makes up for it though. Yeah, but it's a shame. Yeah. No, it's unfortunate. I mean,
He might just be a tag team wrestler. Like that might be his forte, or I had the thought, you know, he might be better suited for the E.
That's look wise, yes.
That's kind of what I mean. Yeah, like and he would be an elite in-ring worker there.
Mm-hmm. So Kevin Knight's prospects as a TNT champion before we move on. What do you foresee? Like, who chases him down? Who does he work with?
I don't know.
It's hard.
Obviously, there's the speedball thing hanging there. At the risk of me sounding, I don't know if racist is the right word, but like, I just don't, you know, the Hurt, you know, Syndicate is back. Yeah. And they're teasing a new member, and that kind of fits in a way. But, you know, and there's been rumblings of a swerve, you know, either partnership or feud. A lot of great ways to elevate him even further. So I don't know. I hate to just group him with the other black guys. That's
right.
You know, call me Vince here. But I don't know. Just a special talent. I'm excited for him. I still wouldn't pull the trigger on a heel turn yet, though. I would wait a little bit.
So this is the title match that I alluded to you might not know about.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I know about Willow and I know about Darby.
Cage match has listed Kevin Knight defending his TNT championship against Claudio Castagnoli.
Oh, yes, please. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Claudio's been working his ass off the last, yeah, since was he in the Continental Classic? I think he was. Yeah, he was.
Yep. Yeah.
The last guy to beat Moxley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About perfect first opponent. Perfect. Hell yeah.
It's going to be a fun match. He's going to make Kevin Knight look good, as if he doesn't look good already. Two more matches left, and these are going to be brief for me because I don't really have many thoughts on Tekla defeating Jamie Hayter, except for Hayter dropping a motherfucker bomb at the end, which I loved.
The issue with that match is that we were at that point in the card where I was very much, this was like, there's no way Thekla's losing. No. Like there's no suspense or drama here. So let's get it fucking moving so we can get to the end of the show. Having said that, they beat the shit out of each other. Like I if this match had been on a Dynamite, it would have been like a 4-star match, but because it was in this spot where it's like, I was ready to move on. That really hurt it a lot for me.
Sadly, I was a little checked out on this match too. I mean, I've been getting higher and higher on Tekla as the weeks go on. And the way she won was fun and the mannerisms afterward. Yeah, great stuff. I think maybe Wednesday night is when we see a Mercedes Moné sighting as well.
Good call. I would agree with that. I was kind of surprised we didn't get it last night.
Mm-hmm. To begin a build towards maybe Mercedes repeating winning the Owen and going back and getting the title. Ooh, from Tekla as a babyface.
Don't hate it.
Yep. Last one, again, minimal thoughts here. The conglomeration, the new AEW Trios champions.
The only strong Canadian, Kyle O'Reilly, getting a win in
Welcome
Canada.
Back. Yeah.
The opening stage entrance was goofy, but I didn't hate it. Didn't overstay its welcome. Fits with that group, and I enjoyed the dogs coming in and kind of quote-unquote peeing on the couch. And that entire thing was good. Again, just like with the women's title match, it was just like, all right, let's get to the big match. Let's get this going. And it was doubly hurt by, Gabe Kidd getting hurt, which I think kind of just threw a giant wrench for whatever they're going to go for in this match.
Great news on this. It was 10 minutes on the nose in terms of match length.
No reason for it to go longer. Just give the hometown boy his win and move on.
As Pedro said earlier, Canada went 1-3 on the night. Thank you, Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah. Shocking.
One more question on that, by the way. Now that Kyle O'Reilly is back, he was getting over. He got a pin on Jon Moxley at Full Gear. This trios is going to keep him occupied for a little while.
They got to get back to that. You know, Tony's very good about not forgetting about, you know, past storylines or disregarding them. I feel like they've got to touch on it at some point, but it was good welcome back match for Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah, especially coming off of injury, which was super unfortunate. The timing sucked.
Yeah, awful timing.
So we got it. That's AEW Dynasty in a nutshell. Great show. Much better after you and I reviewed it. So that's, yeah, because at first I was like, this is an A-minus show. There's parts I really liked about it, but I think when you kind of tied all the stories together and what it's going to lead towards for Double or Nothing and Dynamite, specifically on Wednesday, geez.
Well, and especially because I know you were kind of down on the build for the show. Like you liked the main event matches, you know, the Ospreay Mox and MJF and Omega, but I think the show really delivered. It's funny how much we grade AEW on its own curve as opposed to against all the rest of professional wrestling. Like we're, I guess not me, but you got to remember, like, this was a 3 to 4 week build for this show. There's only so much you can do. And that's the beauty of AEW is they leaned into the main matches for the build. And they hope that that's what's going to bring you in. But then they put this card together of just fucking elite talent in matches that you know is going to deliver. And the card did. I thought it was a huge win.
That's what I said on Unplugged. It was the 4 weeks, which in a lot of cases, I just think it's a death march for anybody who attempts to put pay-per-views together that quickly. You're shoehorned. Or you just hope that your television's so compelling in those 2 to 3 weeks that you could speed this, some of the processes up with these matches. But I mean, to see 3 or 4 matches getting thrown together the Wednesday of, and I understand it again, it's 28 days. It's just, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, you expect a little bit more, but it is a rock and a hard place. I agree. And yes, prayer circle for Kyle O'Reilly, Jon Moxley. Yes, absolutely. No questions asked. All right. Well, yeah, Double or Nothing's coming up in about a month and a half. So that's proper build. We get an Owen. We're getting all this stuff coming up and maybe a Darby Allin AEW heavyweight title win Wednesday night. See what type of mood that puts you in for Classics on Thursday.
And per Top Rope Nation, before, you know, behind the curtain, before we came on, me and Jesse talking, like, well, let's keep it short. Let's just shoot for 45 minutes. And here we are, 20 minutes later than where we wanted to be done.
That's how we roll. We got excited. Yep.
We love all talking wrestling with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Andrade's Dong's favorite podcast.
I was hoping you'd notice that.
Oh, I most certainly did. I mean, it's hard for me these days not to be an Andrade fan. I thank him for not stealing my girl a couple weeks ago.
Oh, so nice of him.
Once again, patrons, Thursday night, WrestleMania 10. It's going to be a fun one. Kyle Ross is returning. You talk about Bret Hart a lot. Just the state of the state. It's the first WrestleMania, spoiler alert, without Hulk Hogan in it.
And it was a win.
So we had that. And then I will be doing a lot of people a favor and talking a lot about WWE the next week, more than I talked about it in a long time. So, yeah, I get it. I know there are some unethical people out there that still really enjoy the product. So,
hey, I love that you talk about it so that I don't have to.
That's why I'm here. I lose sleep for the sacrifice of you because I know you're putting in the overtime in your shoot job. That's why I'm doing this. It's all for you.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Shout out to Ryan Drosty as well. We hope your everything went well for you today.
Oh, one more random question, because this is non-wrestling, totally unrelated to anything. It's just somebody I have recently gotten into. Are you an MF Doom fan?
Oh, we could extend this podcast for like 10 more minutes, but we won't. He's my favorite rapper that is not well known by the mainstream, I feel. He is so good.
I got to find the song because I was listening to a podcast where they were talking about him.
Oh my God.
And so then I started deep diving in and dude, he fucking rules. But he also has a song that was like, God damn, that would kind of made a great entrance song for somebody. Which one was that?
Oh, you need to tell me what it is.
Rap
Snitch Knishes.
No, Hey. I think Hey would have been a good one.
Okay.
That's the one. It's got like the Scooby-Doo noise in it.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, I really
Operation Doomsday.
One. Yeah, I really dig that one. And then, of course, like I didn't think of it in wrestling terms, but obviously All Caps is a great fucking song.
Oh, it is. All Caps when you spell the man name. Whenever you can get a Jeopardy reference in one of his songs. So one of my favorites is do-do-do-do-do. That's the audio daily double. Rappers need to fall off just to save me the trouble. Yeah. Oh, MF Doom. I need to listen to more of him tonight as well.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up.
Can you attach it to the end of this pod?
I want to. Ryan, sorry. I know we normally go off the air with like you actually went off the air with MJF, I think, for your Bleacher Report podcast finish there for the patrons. We're going off the air with MF Doom. Would you prefer it with Hey?
I like Hey. Is there one that you prefer?
There's a lot of really good ones. One Beer is a great song.
Yeah.
There's only one beer left. Yeah, I could go on and on with that too. I could just recite Doom lyrics all night long.
Oh. Sorry. I haven't had a chance to talk to you about rap in a while. So,
Oh man.
I had to bring that up.
Yeah. Last thing on that one, I highly recommend listening to his live from New York. I forgot the name of it, but it has New York in the title. It's just a 35-minute, you can listen to it on Spotify or whatever. It's just him going through a concert. And the audio sounds great. Yeah.
When was that? Because I guess he passed away, but
yep,
he's been gone from the U.S. for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like he left and couldn't get back in.
It was early 2000. It was right when Food came out, which is great.
Because I think Mad Villain came out 2004.
And now that I think about it, it was the Mad Villain album. So yes, it would have been a little bit later. So 2000, yeah, probably around that time.
All time album cover too, Mad Villain.
I know. That's actually what got me hooked on Doom. Honestly, there was a coworker of mine that discovered him, played a couple of his songs. One day, I'm like, who is this dude? He's like, MF Doom. Just gave me a bunch of his CDs. I was just like, oh man. Yeah. Easily my favorite rapper that's not known by too many people ever.
Now, I've just dipped my toes in the water. And I wanted to talk to you about it real quick.
Yes. Well, we're going off the air with Hey because Jamie Hayter looks like Daphne from Scooby-Doo also. So with that being said, hopefully you enjoyed our MF Doom nerdness, especially all my folks in our folks in the UK. So for Justin Joint, my name is Jesse Velasquez, and that has been episode 411 of Top Rope Nation. And as always, we'll see you on the flip side. Let me know if y'all with me, y'all. Just a couple of things I want to say. I only play the games that I win at and stay the same with more rhymes and it's ways to skin cats. As a matter of fact, let me rephrase. With more rhymes and ways to fill a felines in these days. Watch the path of the black one. Super villain, he reps.